There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Caitlyn Jenner, $2,500.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that does. All right,
there you go, boys.
It costs like 10 grand to get driving instructions.
There you go. You got her. You got her, folks.
Whoa. And now I'm loosening up. Now I'm feeling it.
You're loosening it up. Of course, man. You're feeling the New York energy. You're over here. You're in the New York studio. You're with me.
It's kind of fun. I've never been on this side of the camera, and it's weird to see Kissel so small.
It's like
a reverse telescope.
I'll pull my pants down. You'll get to see something pretty well small.
Yep. Especially through camera. Because there's nothing. I guess you could put it up near the cup for scale, but then you'd be doing that in front of Fernando, our employee, and then he'd sue you till you didn't exist anymore.
A whole series of things. how are we going to start the show? Are we starting like that?
We have begun.
Okay, great. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben, hanging out with Henry and hanging out with Marcus.
You're not, though.
Well, I am.
Me and Marcus are hanging out.
I'm tele-hanging out. I'm tele-hanging out. Member Zoom? Remember when Jeffrey Toobin got caught masturbating on Zoom?
We do. The entire nation does.
Yeah, you won't let us forget it.
Today's episode, it's going to be real exciting. We're getting into UFO territory, alien land. I'm not quite sure, but we'll learn together. The incident at Devil's Den. And no, we're not referring to what happened with Henry on the toilet this morning.
No, because that was Devil's living room.
Yeah.
But
no,
guys,
you're staying in New York City. That's what we call the Devil's Kitchen.
Yes, breakfast nook.
Yeah.
Now, guys, are you ready to allow some monkey men into your life?
Why not?
Because that's what today's episode's all about, is are you willing to greet these monkey men
sure.
with the amount of respect that they need to be so that they don't leave your shoes on tight.
I love it.
Because you better be careful, man. The one thing I also did learn from Terry Lovelace is that you better not sleep with your shoes untied.
Because
you never know when you got to get up and not get awed by a bunch of monkey men in space.
Well, indeed. I think those are our prison rules. The monkey man demonized by Wizard of Oz. And I think we need to take the narrative back and realize that flying monkeys can be friends as well. So let's get into it.
Unfortunately, today we will be furthering the evil monkey man narrative.
Unless Fantastic. You do believe what Terry says later on, that they were just masks.
Okay.
But the incident at Devil's Den is a highly compelling UFO abduction encounter told by one of the participants in said abduction. In this case, the participant was a highly respected lawyer named Terry Lovelace Esquire.
I am a highly respected lawyer only with the name of a pornographic actor.
Yes, indeed. I was driving down the street the other day, and there's a street called Dixie Canyon here in Los Angeles, and I thought that would be a great porn star name.
Because it has dicks in it, huh?
And canyon.
Yeah. Actually, it could be both. Well, it could be a man or a woman. Insane.
Absolutely.
If I'm going to do porn, my name's going to be like Rupert Johnson. Like, I just want to be a normal, like a man's man. You know, it's like, oh, there, it's Guy Harrington.
Yeah, I'm going to be Richard Danforth.
That's perfect.
Well, the source for our episode is, of course, The Incident at Devil's Den by Terry Lovelace himself, which is, as we'll get into over the course of this episode, a classic tale of lifelong patterns of alien abduction.
This motherfucker's entire life was riddled with UFOs, monkey men, little people, praying mantis, people, all sorts of stuff, doing all sorts of stuff with his jizz.
Mm-hmm. How do you have the time to become a lawyer?
It was intermittent.
Adderall.
Oh, all right. The power of Addy.
Well, from what Terry claims, he's one of those alien abduction victims who have had to deal with alien encounters since childhood, and not in the sort of sexually adventurous way that, say, David Huggins of Love and Saucers claims to have experienced.
Yeah, because he's complicated, because he kind of always is like, I sure wish that maybe they had said something to me before taking my virginity.
Yeah.
But at the same time, man, you had a big-titted gray alien woman riding you. Just let it go. Just let it in.
And he painted amazing pictures because of it.
He did actually have one hanging on the walls here in the studio.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Now, Terry Lovelace rightfully sees his alien encounters as an extreme burden, a half-century-long nightmare that never seems to end. And with few exceptions, it is a terrifying and painful experience every time.
It truly did. I just watched a really good interview with Terry Lovelace, and he talked for a long time, real long time. And I believe that he believes that something has happened to him.
Yeah.
Because it's true. It ruined his life. And he worked really hard to have a very composed legal life. Like, he's a well-respected lawyer. He was a military man. And all of this shit, because there's something about those guys. It's why it doesn't happen to me. It's why it doesn't happen to me. It's because I would just, like, that goes right in the bio.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I mean, you would love it. Well, that's why it's never going to happen. You want it too much.
It's one of my biggest bookings if I get abducted. But for Terry Lovelace, I guess it really did. Like, I guess especially in the 1970s, if you tell a bunch of your fellow military officers that you've maybe been abducted and probed by a bunch of aliens and slash monkey man in a UFO, that it might hurt your career in the military.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll pin you down in the shower, make fun of you a little bit. It'll be a nice, as we talked about before the show, farva. Like ribbing there from Super Troopers. Terry Lovelace hurt his lawyer career every time he would go and prosecute a case or defend a case. Lingerie he would wear. And I always said,
funny.
Don't wear the lingerie.
That's really interesting that you said that, because it seems that I feel like if he heard that, he might, like, old man jack you.
He might.
You know, old man, you remember when it was Buzz Aldrin who punched the...
It was Buzz.
Yeah. Old man just cocked.
Maybe Neil.
Just from the shoulder, the pop, the World War II punch.
I think it was Neil Armstrong that punched the fake moon guy and the fake moon landing guy in the face. Yeah. Yeah.
Why not?
Now, Terry's big abduction occurred in 1977 when he and his friend Toby went camping at a state park adjacent to the Ozark National Forest while they were taking time off from the Air Force. And of course, we'll cover the actual abduction later on in the episode. But Terry kept that encounter a secret from everyone but his wife for 41 years and indeed planned on never telling anyone. That all changed, however, when a fingernail-sized piece of metal was found in his knee during a routine x-ray in 2012. That year, when Terry was in his early 60s, he woke up and couldn't put any weight on his right leg. Mm. So he went to the hospital to have some x-rays taken. But after the technician took two x-rays, he came back 5 minutes later and took two more. Then two more. And then two more.
That's a total of eight.
That's exactly what I was just about to say, for a total of eight.
Good math. Wow. Kissel actually showed yesterday he has an actually pretty solid grasp of Common Core.
Really?
I did pretty well figuring out our serious radio timing, yes.
64 plus 72. Go, 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 go.
64 plus 72, you would take the 6, that would be 72. So 6 minus 72 would be 57. What?
I misread this. Oh, no. I'm so sorry, sir.
No,
you're designing this airplane?
No, I'll get the answer to you later. Let me look at my phone here and I'll Google it. No, those are the tough ones.
Well, and unfortunately, it turns out he only took 8 x-rays because he was jerking off to him.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, the technician, after taking 8 x-rays, he asked Terry if he'd ever sustained a shrapnel wound in the military because, of course, hey, you got a little tiny object in your knee. But the mystery was that there was no evidence of scar tissue. That's why he kept taking more and more and more. Something's not right here.
Oh, yeah.
Additionally, there was a flower petal arrangement of objects the same density as bone floating in the middle of his calf muscle.
Not good.
No.
Weird.
Extrapolating from what we know about other mysterious objects found in human bodies, this all points towards the possibility that Terry was a victim of alien implantation.
They gave him double D's from space!
I know what I saw!
But Terry, it's interesting, the concept of alien implants, because we covered it in an episode a long time ago.
Long time.
We kind of went over it. But what still holds is that most alien implants are found by podiatrists and hypnotherapists almost like they might not know how to read x-rays. But
these are x-ray technicians here. These guys are true.
But we do have chunks of metal get pulled out of people and we don't know what the hell it is. But a lot of times as they go and they finally get it examined, it's not, you'd expect it to look like some kind of crazy microchip, but it's more a very unique packaging of metals that are not necessarily found in the area in which the person that was suffering from the implant lived or worked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, the thing about the Terry Lovelace story is, I'll say this right up top, is that, you know, I did say, like, this is a classic alien story because there are many of the tropes in the story that we see throughout a lot of alien abductions. But the thing is that I also believe that Terry Lovelace believes that all of this happened to him.
He has the eyes of an incredibly haunted human being.
Yes, very much so. So that does give the story some credence. Definitely not saying that's proof that this actually happened, but Terry Lovelace, he's not a guy on a park bench nudging you in the ribs, asking you to listen to his UFO story. This guy's legit.
I wish he was.
All right. We can always use a little bit more credence.
Hell yeah,
that's
bro.
That's you. That's you stuck on, man.
But one must ask exactly when Terry received these implants, because from what Terry claimed, he had been plagued by alien visitations ever since he was a little boy, back when Terry knew the visitors only as the Monkey Man.
Whoa! Cool!
See, Terry's visitations began in the early to mid-60s, when Terry was only 8 years old. So the image that we can all immediately conjure up in our minds for alien greys, that was not yet in the public consciousness.
Yes.
So Terry's young brain filtered these aliens as something he could understand, i.e. monkeys.
Yes, or even because they were monkey-like in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, jumping around, jumping on the bed, one fell down, hit its head, we know what they do.
Yeah, they're very clumsy. But these aliens, they jumped up and down. And you'll see, like, this is a common thing amongst greys, especially. They love to hop.
They do.
Huh.
Well, from what Terry said, he woke up in the middle of the night to see four gray, 2-foot-tall monkeys with large yellow eyes, long arms, and tails.
Why isn't he just making friends with them?
It's difficult when you just
fun.
Wake up.
I know, but it's just like they're going to be like, oh, what's that little weird-looking guy? Kind of fun.
Not as many people are as, let's say, allowing as you are.
All right.
Where you really have a strong threshold of what you sort of allow into your general reality.
I just don't care about so much stuff.
Well, after staring at him with broad grins for a bit, the monkey men said, without moving their lips, quote,
come play with us.
It was a telepathic thing.
Yeah, come play with us. I'm like, all right,
sweet.
Do it
without moving my lips.
No, I mean, it was obvious that they were not speaking audibly. They were speaking telepathically. Yes. They said, quote,
come play with us. We'll sure. have fun and we'll take you back home in just a little while.
Nice.
Now, of course, Terry's parents didn't believe him. But after nights of Terry waking up screaming that the monkey men were coming to get him.
The monkey men are coming to get me!
His father put electrical tape around his door to keep the monkey men out.
That's such a good dad quick fix. But yeah, there we go. Yep, that'll do it right there. Yeah, no monkey man can figure out tape.
No way.
But strangely, it worked for 8 weeks.
Oh.
And all the monkey men tried a different approach.
Mm.
One afternoon, Terry said he was in his backyard shooting arrows at a bunch of big pieces of hay when a large, silver-shaped flat disc appeared 50 feet above his head, making no noise. The only indication that it was not a hallucination was the sudden smell of freshly mowed grass and ionized air.
Yankee candles.
Indeed.
Is the smell of freshly cut grass, is that a common UFO thing? I seem to remember reading that somewhere.
It does come up, especially just straight up in anomalous like experiences, it does come up, that smell. Like, it might be something else, because I think a lot of times I also hear the term ozone.
Yeah, ozone.
And that it might, it just depends on what it calls up for you.
Yeah, I think it is actually ozone and not, because I think I looked it up and ionized air and ozone gets confused a lot.
Yes.
I think you met it with the smell of ozone.
Yeah, it's cooking electricity.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So. And you know you're having a good weekend when you're in the ozone.
That does, yeah, yeah. But yeah, man, I'm having a good week here.
Except I did watch that one video of the guy that has, what was it, like 50 orgasms a day?
Wow.
What?
And his life's a living hell.
Yeah.
Oh, he can't control it?
Which is, he comes and he comes and he comes, and then it's like he's talking to his reporter, and he's like, no one cares because I'm ejaculating. And well, everywhere I go, people say, lucky guy. But then, next thing you know, I'm at my niece's christening, and I'm coming.
Why are we talking about that guy right now? That's a whole episode.
Is he British? Can we talk about him during our UK relaxed set?
He's British in spirit.
Fantastic.
Well, after about 10 minutes of this disc floating in Terry's backyard, it tilted upward and silently shot off.
Nice.
A week after the sighting of the craft, though, Terry's nightmares truly began. with visions of shadowy figures grabbing him and carrying him away with many hands.
Cool.
And then once he was carried away to another location, he was held down by man-sized praying mantis-like bugs who ignored his frightened pleas of mercy.
See, that's scary.
The mantis
that is...
has no mercy.
Yeah, that is scary. He's right about that one.
I actually talked about this recently. I was interviewed by Gothic Beauty Magazine.
I know, because you're quite the gothic beauty.
Everyone always asks me for tips and skits of how they could be more goth. And the first thing I tell them, wear sunscreen. But I was talking about the praying mantis aliens and about oftentimes...
With Gothic Beauty Magazine?
Of course.
Sure.
All right.
I'm not me.
Was that right after your Polish pasty conversation that you were having?
What?
Of course, the Polish pasties
to go over
when they
your
put
Polish nipples.
Yeah, the Polish they put the pasties on their buttocks.
And very
they
funny.
Pretend like
wow, oh wow,
wow.
Oh, have you been hanging out with my father? But the praying mantises are the scariest of the alien subgroups, besides the reptilians, which are perennially. I honestly now I'm starting to think that a lot of people are talking mess about reptilians, and it's actually the opposite. They actually are suffering from some form of intergalactic racism, and I want to echo. I will bring that up in future episodes.
I'm not totally against the reptilians at this point.
Yes,
people have not been doing great.
No, but the praying mantis are oftentimes when they're seen in these scenarios, they're described as Nazi-like.
Oh,
with their attention to devious detail.
Interesting.
Ooh, yeah, they are scary for sure.
But while Terry was obviously going through something, his sister, of course, made fun of him for it.
That's what they do.
So to get back at her, he hid under the couch and waited until she was on the phone. Then he grabbed her ankle, and she was so surprised she screamed and wet her pants.
Nice.
And it's fun that he put that in his book.
Yep. That's called brother revenge.
He got it good.
Man, you can wait for years before your revenge finally plays out.
Absolutely.
When Terry's father confronted him, Terry said that he wanted her to know what it was like to be scared, telling his father, quote,
"Speak me if you want, but you better make them stop it or else."
Jesus, all right.
I'm 4 years old, Daddy.
I know,
if you
want
to come over here and try to spank my ironclad little booty, I dare you. And you have at it. Let it clang away with your big old man hands and your wedding band slapping against my metal butt. But I'll let you know. I know what I saw.
After that, Terry said his relationship with his father was never the same.
Yep.
Oh.
Now, over the next few months, Terry developed both a fear of the dark and a fear of open spaces. So he was taken to a doctor where he explained his nightmares. Or were they nightmares after all?
See?
Ooh.
Now he's getting it.
The doctor, of course, blamed it all on cartoons. Mm. Watching too much Space Ghost, kid.
Yeah, it's always, I always fantasize. The thing about Space Ghost, especially the original Space Ghost,
Space
which is also
Space Ghost!
It definitely always be involved being like group assaulted by monkey men.
Well, actually, he's not too far off there. Lest ye forget Zorak, my friend. The praying mantis alien.
We now know the whitewashing of Zorak, right? But he's different in the cartoon.
Okay.
Yeah, in the original, he's much scarier. Now, things calmed down for a couple of years after that. But at age 11, Terry woke up in the middle of the night to find multicolored lights shining through his window.
Oh.
And when he looked out the window, he saw another flying saucer shrouded in heavy fog.
That's so cool.
Sweet.
Okay, sweet. Yeah.
This time, the craft was accompanied by a low, bassy hum.
Oh, my God.
Sit under speaker like the old Howard Stern show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice. It's like a Flaming Lips concert.
Yeah, or like a Sun O show.
Yeah. Ooh. I don't know who that is, but
okay. Someone like good. Oh, yeah, love him.
Yeah, looking for the brown note.
Mm.
And the nightmares returned with images of the big insect-like things. And in his words, they were manipulating tools with long, thin fingers.
Ooh, lucky.
And now that I think about it, yeah, he might have just been having Zorak nightmares.
I mean, has anyone ever had a Zorak nightmare?
I'm sure they have, yes.
Yeah, I would imagine so. But yeah, like you said, we know Zorak. As like, you know, we know him as the funny Zorak.
Yeah.
C. Martin Croker. You know, that's how we know
that's
Zorak.
That's how I like my Zorak.
Yeah. But eventually, though, things calmed down again. And Terry told no one about his experiences for decades.
I'm not telling anybody for goddamn decades.
Okay.
He did, however, write a poem in high school recounting his experiences, which Henry will now recite in part.
Okay. Shadows from the hallway crept into my room.
Long the monkey men too, I assume. Never before in life had I seen a creature that grinned. Before I could scream, a candle's flame dances before it grows dim. One monkey man's shadow had slowly crept in. On his knees and with ease, he is perched on the edge of my bed, if you please. The silence was broken 1 inch from my ear as the monkey man whispered, "My boy, I'm right here." Now monkeys were four and were masked to deceive. Children or even grown men, if you please. I started to tremble and covered my head. But the monkeys, all four, they crept close to my bed. And outside of my covers, four peeled with delight. These monkey men here will take me this night.
Dude, that's really good. That's a great poem. I mean, he does need to see the counselor because it seems like he's being molested, but it is a very
group of
good
men dresses as apes. That's very
it is a very good poem, though.
It's pretty solid. It's much longer than that. It's very, very long. Very long.
Okay. Yeah. Talented guy. Smart kid, you can tell.
Mm-hmm. But the kick, he became a lawyer.
I know.
Maybe he went to Tufts.
Tufts.
It's where my brother-in-law went. He went to Tufts.
Yeah, and he's doing very well now, isn't he?
He's doing great. He's doing wonderfully.
Very well.
But the kick comes at the very end with this final stanza.
I swear by all that is holy and all that is right, that next time you come to take me at night, when four little monkeys crouch near my bed, I'll take my revolver and shoot them all dead.
Well, it's a little aggressive towards the end there, but again, he's got some issues. You can't write a limerick or a poem like that anymore.
Well, because tell that's me, violence. This monkey man story is absolutely compelling, Terry, to tell me, do they like bananas?
Now the aliens.
That was coast to coast. He did do that. It's just been monkey man everywhere.
Did you? Now tell me, Terry, I don't mean to poke holes in your story here, but you live close to a zoo.
George Norrie, he's sense. Asking the hard questions.
He is. He's asking accurate
it's
questions.
The only critical thing I've ever heard him say on Coast to Coast, because he's always yes-anding, but he was just being like, I simply cannot believe that monkeys would ever work in such an aggressive fashion. It's like he just refused to believe that monkeys could ever be anything.
Oh, they can be very aggressive. I think Michael Jackson's monkey Bobo or whatever. I think
Bubbles. Bubbles.
Yeah, he had to be put down. I mean, he had to be put
down. Because of all the fucking trauma he experienced.
Yeah.
Everything he saw, he wasn't allowed to tell anybody.
What is this, 1992? You're doing Bubbles jokes?
Oh, yeah. And he always was pointing at the kids going,
okay, thank you, Bubbles.
Now, the aliens stopped bothering Terry for a while, and Terry eventually joined the Air Force. But once again, the aliens found him, although it's hard to say whether this next sighting was about him specifically or if it was just a fun coincidence.
Okay.
See, in 1975, Terry was working as an EMT and a medic at Whiteman Air Force Base in Kansas City. He was working with a young senior airman whom Terry named Tobias in his book Incident at Devil's Den. Called him Toby for short.
Sure.
Okay.
So one day during a routine emergency call, Terry and Toby both came upon a chaotic scene of emergency vehicles and security vehicles with men crouched behind cars holding rifles. Shit's going down.
Cool.
Uh-oh.
Not just stopping, Terry and Toby saw that the object causing the commotion was a black diamond-shaped object a little larger than a full-size van hovering about 50 feet over a missile silo.
Weird.
This is also very common in UFO sightings.
And it's the matte black triangles, pyramids, diamonds, and also sometimes a lot of times, especially over military bases, the way they describe it, a lot of chrome spheres.
Chrome.
Sniffing around, see what we got.
Yeah. Well, Spotlight showed that it did indeed have a matte black finish. It was non-reflective, and there was no sign of engines or propellers. This sounds a lot like the so-called UAPs that we've been seeing lately in these leaked videos. And this is something that he saw in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And like some of those objects, this object went from a dead stop to blinding speed and was gone in less than a second. And of course, when Terry asked an officer, hey, just what the hell was that thing? Mm-hmm. The officer said, quote,
Guys. That was an experimental helicopter, okay?
Okay, I didn't see any blades. It didn't make any noise, though.
You're inside. Just shut up, okay? You don't know, all right? It's just, all right, it works somehow. I don't know. You think I know?
Hey, buddy, Is that thing full of monkeys?
Let me hear. Can I hear it? Well, am I hearing any chimp?
Nope. Can't hear it.
Chimps aren't monkeys.
Wow.
Chimps aren't monkeys. They're just not. I'm just saying. Is there a difference?
Yeah, there is a difference. I know.
Yeah.
Right?
There is.
A whole bunch of differences.
Are you looking it up right now?
Yes.
Are you trying to fact check me if monkeys and chimps are different?
Chimps, monkeys.
I'm going to wait. Do you really want me to do it?
Chimps, monkeys.
Let's see.
Chimps are not monkeys. No.
Fantastic. Marcus Burks with the win.
Really good.
2 years later, though, Terry saw another object that sounds quite a bit like the object I myself saw in high school while hanging out in a graveyard alone.
Oh.
At around 4 a.m., Terry said that he and Toby saw a glowing orb just below the North Star that slowly traversed the night sky before it blinked out like someone flipped a switch.
Yes, which you hear quite often.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But despite all the weird shit happening out in the wilds, Terry and Toby decided to take a camping trip together at a place called Devil's Den near Russellville, Arkansas.
Well, that is actually where, and then Terry was saying when he was, they were setting up this camping trip. He was like, when Toby asked me, hey, Terry, you want to go camping? I said, first of all, you're goddamn crazy. It's the first time I've ever heard about camping from you ever once. Because he knows me. I'm a city guy. I'm from St. Louis.
Yeah.
Like, he was really like being like, why would I go camping? But it kind of sounded like Toby was kind of angling. He's like, we should go out. It's just like, I know this place. Mm-hmm. We can see the sky where it's all these beautiful stars. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. like Terry's just like, you know, it's like, he was my best friend. It was the best time we ever spent together was me and him holding hands, watching the stars. But there's nothing gay about it. It was just me and my military buddy.
Having fun at the old Devil's Den with your buddy Toby.
Yeah. Well, at Devil's Den, both of their lives would effectively be ruined by what happened in the woods.
Oh.
Just like so many abduction victims before and after.
They actually got stuck in the 69 position, which was
very difficult.
It's weird.
Very difficult to explain to your CO why you're in that scenario where you're like, I tell you, there was these monkey men, they left a series of banana peels all over the field. And next thing you know, I was spinning in the air. We were running towards each other playing a little bit of naked touch football because that's what we do. All right,
indeed.
He's trying to see how slippery we can get, but it's more about avoiding capture.
But they are a fantastic defense attorney team because one guy stands on his feet, he gives a nice speech, and they flip around.
Yep.
And they tumble, and the other guy, and they're really good. If the cock fits, you must acquits. And, you know, you can imagine how the cock was fitting there.
That's great.
Live from your grave.
Now, after arriving at the campsite, Toby and Terry decided to take a hike before setting up their tent and all. Oddly, they stopped after about 3 miles for a rest, and both of them fell asleep. When they woke up, it was almost sundown, and Terry said that he felt disoriented as they both hurried back to camp.
Yeah, he said it was very compelling, that he was a young man. You didn't understand. He's like, I never slept. I didn't sleep. I was in the military.
It's weird. Yeah. I've never been on a hike and thought, I'm going to lay down and
take a nap.
They may have passed out or something.
Yeah. Well, they won't see. After hastily setting up their tent and a fire, they settled in, but noticed that while the forest had been just an hour before full of life, there was now not a single sound around, not even a solitary cricket or frog.
What he did say, like this idea that him and his buddy had a yell over the fire and the crickets. Is it that loud?
No, it's never that loud.
That's what he was saying. He was like, you know, because that was the thing is that Toby and I, we were just, you got to scream at each other to even be heard over these frogs.
It could be loud. If there's a bunch of cicadas around or something like that, you would have to yell. If you're in the middle of it.
I guess if it is cicadas, I mean, a fire is not that. I mean, unless you're like burning down a hospital or something. Like,
that's the screams.
That loud.
It's the damn screams.
Yeah.
You can't sleep with all these screams.
Well, as the silence settled, it was at that point that Toby pointed out something in the sky. There were three identical points of light sitting low in the western sky in a perfect triangle. And as he and Terry watched, the lights got brighter and began to move, rotating while maintaining that triangular configuration.
Cool.
The lights then climbed the horizon, growing brighter still as they grew larger and sped up, blocking out entire fields of stars. This thing was fucking big.
Cool.
Finally, these lights, which were now very obviously a craft, they stopped just over Toby and Terry's head It was so large that it blocked out the entire sky above.
I've seen a couple of stories, like many stories of sightings that sound just like this.
Mm-hmm.
This comes up a lot. Just recently, we talked with somebody about a sighting over New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are types of things that show up. Like, they literally, like, will, like, it happens in New York, too, weirdly. Like, yeah. people have talked about seeing
these. It looked like a pizza pie. It looked like a slice of pizza.
That's how you know they're from Brooklyn.
Whoa.
Well, later, Terry would describe this craft as resembling a five-story office building covered in brightly lit windows featuring constantly changing colors. And while it's not quite as large as the football field-sized crafts others have seen, it does sound similar to what was seen by dozens of people during the Hudson Valley sightings just a few years later.
I still kind of have a theory that somewhere the government has like three pyramid UFOs that they've had, and then they every once in a while they just like fly them out.
Yeah.
Have just to see what happens.
Yeah.
Yep. Turns out they freaked out again. Put it back. Yep.
Now, again, this large craft was covered in the same non-reflective black matte surface as the smaller diamond object that Toby and Terry had seen a few months before. But for some reason, Toby decided to communicate with the craft.
Uh-oh.
And he flashed his flashlight three times towards the sky.
Toby, don't be such a Toby. What are you doing?
This is the problem. If you'd invite a Toby, he's going to invite the aliens into the tent.
Oh, God.
But he said that when they were watching it, it was tumbling in a way. Like, he said he watched it move, and for him, he felt that it was doing it for his benefit.
Ah. Yeah, because Toby's like that friend that when you meet the weird guy on the camping trip, the weird hippie that's alone, Toby's going to be the guy that invites him along, and then you got to deal with that guy for the next two days.
No, Turtle's great. Yeah, he says he gave up his last name because the government's a series of liars. So, but yeah, he's coming. Yeah. I gave him all of our medicine to hold.
That's great.
Well, instantly, after Toby flashed the lights, a beam of light the size of a softball focused on their dead fire pit. And after a few minutes, a blue pencil-thin light struck the campsite, actively and hypnotically darting around the area, never sitting on anything for more than a few seconds.
It's like a cat toy.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It seemed like it was looking for Toby and Terry, because it did hit them a couple of times. And then after it hit him, it disappeared. And after they were hit, they both felt a pleasant feeling of sedation.
Cool.
Oh.
Both of them, unable to stay awake, crawled into their tent to sleep, oddly not caring all that much about what was happening. And this is interesting. Henry, I wanted to ask you about this. The book, Incident at Devil's Den, used a term called alien apathy. Have you ever heard of that before?
I've never heard that specific term, but that's kind of what they talk about. There is a sedation effect. They say that when you are abducted, as we'll cover, is that a lot of times they show up, often the scenario is they see a light, something weird in the sky, they're oddly fascinated by it, it shows up, the entities come into the room. A lot of times they're very peaceful, they're trying to calm you down, they're saying, don't worry, we always do this, everybody loves this. And then you go like, oh yeah, I do love this. And they talk about how you sleep, you basically in a kind of half sleep state, like that's when you travel through things, you travel up through, like the light allows you that you're traveling in to break all laws of physics.
But when they went to sleep, that's when the true terror began.
Yep.
Now, Terry Lovelace, of course, blacked out, and he had no real idea of what happened to him that night until he later went under hypnosis. All he knew that night is that when he was woken up by lights, he heard the same low bass hum he'd heard during encounters as a child. Every bone in his body ached, and he was dreadfully thirsty.
Yeah, he said he was the thirstiest he'd ever been in his life, and then he posted butt to Maine.
Oh, my goodness.
Wait, butt to what?
It's something on the internet. I've seen people say that.
Butt to Maine. You know what I learned off of the internet today? Throat goat.
Whoa.
Someone who's super good at sucking dick.
I mean, I feel like that's self-explanatory.
Yes, it is.
He loves it.
Toby, however, was already awake, and he had been crying. He was breathing quickly and shallowly, and was trying to peer out of the tent, but all they could see was these flashing multicolored green and yellow strobe lights.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't have flashed the flashlight there, Toby.
It is Toby's fault.
God.
And Toby's like, we can't go out there, man. Yeah. I rang the doorbell, man.
Jeez.
Suddenly, though, the two men realized that there were people outside of their tent, at least a dozen.
Well, he was very scared at first because they had to go. So where they were was in a restricted area of the national forest where they were at. So they had to go past a bunch of like no trespassing signs because, again, Toby had a spot where they could be super alone and watch the stars together. And so they had to go out
there. It's fine to just go out and watch some stars with your buddies. Sometimes it doesn't have to be like that, Henry.
No,
sometimes
I know.
You can have a platonic relationship with a friend.
Marcus is reliving his college experience.
But no, I say he went out there. So at first they thought, they got us. My God, they found us. They thought that it was like park rangers and shit coming to kick them out.
Mm-hmm. Well, a column of white. Wait a minute. So he thought it was a bunch of park rangers with flashing strobe lights?
No, this is Terry trying to piece it all together after the fact.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, a column of light then poured from the dead center of the building-sized aircraft and a pillar 30 feet in diameter. And Terry and Toby saw little people.
The little people!
Nice.
Perhaps those not unlike Terry's childhood monkey men.
Oh!
Yeah. He said the way they looked is that he said that their legs, they were like... They were like in the field, like being weird, right? Like
being fun,
working in remote. Like they kind of walk like they were programmed to walk together. But he said their legs looked like they were hinged to go backwards and they had no knees.
Oh.
And so they were like, you know, like when that you see Kermit the Frog run.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really like, unsettling.
It's like that.
Yeah.
Where they're just, they kind of float and they're like, you can't really see my act out, but it's like a doll. Like, yeah. Where the legs kind of kick back and forth, but then they slowly trotted into this light that was there and they went, and then they pixelated away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Yeah. People can't see the act out, Henry. For the 11th year in a row, it's a podcast.
They can hear it, though.
Yes.
Well, once the last being was gone, the light switched off, the craft stopped making its low vibrational hum, and the meadow was once again dead silent. The craft slowly gained altitude, but instead of tilting and shooting away like they usually do, it merely ascended like a hot air balloon until it could no longer be seen.
Yeah, it's like a hot woman showing off her butt.
Ooh, how's it?
Slowly sauntering down the street.
Sure.
Bye now. See you later, hater.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Great. Great impression.
Thank you. I know women.
Yeah, you have an idea.
Now, something had obviously happened between the time the two men fell asleep and the time they woke up terrified and crying. But all Terry had was the vague memories of images and sounds. He remembered the whirring noises heard inside the large mothership, senses of motion, and visions of ceilings and wall panels. He also had the vague suspicion that he'd seen not only other craft inside the building-sized mothership, but dozens of other humans milling around, not afraid at all.
Alien government co-conspiracy working together, retrofitting technology, putting in our phones, giving us TikTok. Why? Don't know.
Perfect. Absolutely. You're on the path of to getting shot by the cops as we talk, Henry.
Game. Great job. If only.
Well, Terry also noticed that his boots, which were previously tightly laced, they were now unlaced, and his socks were crooked. And his friend Toby's boots were in the same condition.
Yep.
Their bodies ached, they felt sick, and they were both, as we said, insanely thirsty.
Nothing untoward.
No.
Nothing at all.
After deciding to leave, they made it to a gas station, and Terry and Toby noticed then that they were both badly sunburned all over their entire bodies with no tan lines at all.
See, that's interesting.
Very common in alien encounters. Very common. And common in high strangeness of all kinds.
Oh, yes. We talked about this earlier. We talked about it in the live show, too.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that there is a sickness associated with the phenomena that the government is very actively interested in figuring out how to gain access to and use for their own good.
Mm-hmm.
Also very common on the beaches of Brazil.
Well, yeah, the no tan lines.
Yeah, absolutely.
But these guys, if they were tanning, I'm pretty certain that they were wearing clothes.
I'm pretty certain. And both of them were also covered in what appeared to be insect bites, little red bumps. But their main concern at that moment was thirst. And because I don't think they sold bottled water at gas stations in the 70s.
No, they definitely didn't. I remember the first bottled water I ever saw. I was stunned.
Yeah.
They could capture the ocean in a bottle.
It's kind of like that.
Is this all water?
It
every
is.
Water ever been?
We've normalized bottled water way too much.
Yeah, we have. So what Toby and Terry did, well, the reason why we normalized bottled water so much is because most of us in America can't drink the water that comes out of the faucet.
Yay!
Yeah, you got to toughen up your immune system. You got to do 1 ounce a day, then do 2 ounces, and then you're strong like bull.
The first actual sold bottled water was in 1767.
Fantastic.
Huh. But not
fantastic.
At gas stations.
No, because
you know why?
Cars.
There were no gas stations back then.
And where
fucking
was
idiot,
it?
You fucking moron.
Yeah, where was it? Where was it? Also, who the fuck knows? Yeah.
Was on,
you tell me how the
water historians, apparently. The oh most boring God. People that have ever lived. Yeah, I study water.
It's kind of the interesting, probably.
Water it is, actually. Yeah. No, actually, it's probably water. It's very interesting.
Well, anyway, they fucking bought a bunch of orange soda. Well, actually, Toby bought a six-pack of orange soda. Toby bought a six-pack of orange soda. Terry bought a gallon of grape soda.
Ugh,
and they just
That's not going to quench the thirst, though. It's too much sugar.
I don't know. Maybe their bodies were depleted of sugars. Perhaps their bodies craved it, like some people crave salt.
Interesting.
Now, once Terry got back to the Air Force base, he had a temperature of 104 and got checked over by a nurse who found, after photographing his seemingly diseased body, that there were 124 red spots covering his skin. As is practice for the Air Force, when someone shows up looking all weird, they gave him the obligatory once-over with the Geiger counter.
Yeah, see if he's irradiated.
Yeah, and there was many click, click, clicks.
Yeah, he got literally, he was radiation burned from something we don't know. And I know that his wife corroborates this.
Yeah.
But they did go to the hospital. He said that was the most embarrassing thing, is that him and his buddy, they drove away, and it was kind of like, it's scandalous. Kind of, because they were both like, they felt weird about what happened. They had no clue what happened. And he dropped off Toby.
They've obviously felt violated in some way.
All fucked up. And he was like, so he dropped off Toby. They're both like, see ya. And then like he went home and his wife was like, you have to go to the hospital. Like very hot. You're physically very hot and you are pink.
Yeah.
You're vividly pink.
Mm-hmm. And covered in
bites.
Weird bites. Weird bites. Way
why don't
more.
Play, why don't we play just... play a game of mushy pig.
What?
I'm pretty pink. You want to play a game of mushy pig?
I hate mushy pig.
Oh, I want to know what mushy pig is.
You know what it is? You look for the hard part. You take a soft old pig and you try to make it hard.
No, but how do you play mushy pig?
Mostly cunnilingus.
Yeah, he's talking about cunnilingus. He's just he doesn't know what else to call it. That's what his mother always called it.
Yeah, we call it mushy pig.
Well, after 2 days in the hospital, going in and out of fever dreams, two men in business suits showed up in Terry's room and introduced themselves as agents of the OSI, the Office of Secret Intelligence, which was an actual sub-branch of the CIA. They presented Terry with papers to sign that Terry couldn't even read because his eyes were now swollen shut.
Oh my gosh.
So I just got to sign this shit? And they're like, yeah, it's cool.
Wow.
But after a fair amount of vague threats, they told Terry that if he knew what was good for him, he'd never contact Toby ever again.
They made him break up with his friend.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible. Horrible.
Yeah. And they also told him, never mentioned to anyone what happened that night at Devil's Den.
Me and Toby were just seeing the stars. There's nothing gay about it. There's nothing gay about it. I talked to my old friend who's the gayest straight man I know. And he said that it's cool. This is what guys do.
It's a purely platonic relationship. You can do things with your male friends.
You can
go
Henry.
Hang out.
You don't have to be so insecure about it.
That's right.
Yeah. I texted you at 9 p.m., Kissel. It was like, you want to go to a field and go look at some stars? You don't think it's not going to be weird?
But that's just because it's us.
Yeah.
Because it's us. You can have friends that have that relationship with.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Henry, you city boys, you don't know.
I don't like grass.
Yeah.
Well, afterward, Terry was discharged from the hospital and given a 14-day prescription of mystery pills. Yep. Odd generic capsules, no telling of what was inside.
Huh.
Now, Terry did take the pills for a couple of days, but found that he soon couldn't remember even the simplest things. It was obviously scrambling his brain. So after only three doses, he flushed the rest. Against the agent's orders, Terry then decided to see Toby. No one's going to tell me if I can't fucking hang out with my friend
That's
or not.
That's my wow. friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Toby was in the middle of an alcoholic spiral.
Cool. That's a cool friend. Yeah. But just, yeah. It sounds like, yeah, his life was absolutely destroyed.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Toby desperately asked if their encounter at Devil's Den had really happened.
It happened, Terry. Did it happen, Terry?
Yeah.
Why were our boots different?
Yeah. And Terry told him, yes, it did indeed occur. But after he left, he never saw Toby again.
You know what? Now that I've seen him again, actually, I don't want to be friends with him.
Yeah. No, he's all weird now.
When Terry returned to work at the Air Force base, he was given a task that seems to me like a low-level psyop. He was told to paint plywood workbenches, then was given the task of sanding the paint off the workbenches he just painted.
Oh, yeah.
He did that for 2 months.
Well, if he had taken all the pills, he would have been fascinated.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
He didn't take all the pills.
Yeah, he wouldn't have
and
noticed.
It's kind of nice to paint and then grind it off, and there's something fun about it.
Well, yeah, you know, it's again, or just keeping him busy.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping him busy, absolutely.
After those 2 months, Terry was called to OSI headquarters. Although, OSI headquarters, I don't know if OSI had a headquarters since it's a sub-branch of the CIA.
It could just be in some room somewhere in Virginia, and then you just have to go through the with some hall in the Pentagon.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, it was a small beige room at the end of a long hallway lined with steel doors. It's a terrifying place.
Very scary.
Yes.
And there he waited for hours until his commanding officer finally showed up, along with one of the OSI agents who had come to intimidate him in the hospital. And yes, I know OSI is a cartoon organization.
No,
but
OSI
it was also very much a real sub-branch of the CIA.
But there's also the Air Force Special Investigative Unit, which is also labeled under OSI. It depends on how you look at it. Every branch has a group. Every branch of the military has like basically their own version of both internal affairs, and because that's what it's all about is investigating from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, Terry was told that he was about to undergo hypnosis with the assistance of medication.
MK Ultra.
Somebody needed information. Well, after Terry weakly protested,
No.
The other two men were joined by a mysterious figure carrying a small kit in a leather bag.
Let us see what is going to happen inside of your mind.
No!
Yep, it's always a little secret Nazi.
I know.
Terry was then injected with an unknown substance and put under hypnosis. Although Terry does maintain that he stayed conscious the entire time. Because he would have had to have been. Because he did remember enough to write a whole goddamn chapter in his book about it.
Well,
and
actually,
no way did he just make it up.
Hey, we know that hypnosis is not necessarily the most reliable way to recount information, but it's very interesting what comes up, especially if it's super specific. But I wonder if isn't it true? Maybe I'm incorrect, but if you do go through hypnosis, you do kind of have like subtle memories, right?
I don't know, because I do know that every time that we've talked about like hypnotic sessions, like say with the woman, the Andreessen from the
Andreessen
affair. You know,
Betty Andreessen.
Betty Hill also went through a fair amount of hypnosis. They always recorded it, and the people, if I remember, when they come out of it, they're like, "What happened?"
Happened? But they have a vague memory that something did happen.
Yeah,
I went through hypnosis, and I'm no longer gay. And now, if you excuse me, I have to go have sex with this man.
Perfect, Kissel.
Thank you.
Really. Perfect.
Well, from what Terry claims, the CO, known henceforth as Brad. Dragged things
God,
up.
God, I hate that. There's something about a Brad CO. Like,
He's a pain in the fucking ass.
You can see the butch haircut. You can, the flat top. You can see
John Hamm from the new Tom Cruise.
No, John Hamm is too round faced. I think a Brad is going to, he's got a pinhead.
Yeah.
Tight
JT
haircut.
JT Walsh.
You're thinking of Brad Dorf. That's the Brad you're thinking of. Real tight pinhead.
Yeah, I love him.
Yeah, not a pinhead, but he's got a thin head. I love Brad Dorf. He's one of my favorites.
I want to meet him.
So maybe think of the guy as Brad Dorf. Maybe we'll put Brad Dorf in this role.
All right, let's do it.
As the hypnosis.
Cast.
Well, this CO apparently drug things up from Terry's subconscious mind. Things either forgotten or repressed. Things that Terry maintains were his objective experiences. Terry claims that some combination of the sedation and the half hypnosis opened up his memory. And once he said these things out loud, he claims to have never forgotten them because he fought through the sedation like a fucking teenager taking an Ambien.
That's what I do. That's why I can't take sleeping medications.
Because you fight through them?
I fight.
Yeah, and then you...
I rage against the dying of light, and then I fucking...
Yeah, then you fall asleep.
Can't wait till you get on Twitter one fateful night.
Oh, yeah, you'll see. That's why I just logged out. I literally did that, so I'll never have access again.
During the hypnosis session, after telling the story all the way up until they arrived at Devil's Den, Terry said that the space people, as he called them... They told him and Toby where to go. And after being sedated by the blue light, Terry said that they were both taken, although Toby was only taken once for a very long extended session, while Terry was taken twice. Apparently, they took Terry the first time when he and Toby fell asleep on their initial hike. That's possibly why they fell asleep. Possibly they were sedated by the aliens, and that's why Terry woke up feeling so discombobulated. Sure. That time, apparently that wasn't all that bad. Second time, that was when the real work got done.
Yeah, these aliens, they like you too. We talked about the trickster side of the phenomena. If this is indeed a thing that does happen, they like to fuck with you.
Yeah.
Like there is something about them doing some kind of constant test about how we react to what they do.
Mm-hmm. See, these space people were the same so-called monkey men from Terry's childhood. And Terry was now realizing, as many people do later on in life, that they've been abducting him for damn near his entire life.
Oh, yes. And he then, remembering it, realized, I think that they were wearing some kind of mask that looked like a monkey. They literally, like, that was one way he interpreted it, was that, like, maybe they were wearing something that they felt maybe would make them look more, because aliens do that, too.
Yeah.
They shapeshift a lot of times. So that's what the idea is, to be more comforting. Like, they think it might be more fun for a kid to experience a bunch of monkeys stealing them in the night.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess so.
Yeah. And again, you know, him saying that I fought through the sedation and I remembered the half hypnosis and I was abducted my entire life, like, it stretches the limits of credulity.
But it's very interesting. The fact that it's hyper specific is very interesting.
It's hyper specific and it also shares a lot with other alien abductions.
Yes.
And some of the craft that he claimed to have seen matches the craft that we've seen in videos in which we absolutely know, like, that is a UFO.
That's a thing.
We do not know what that is. So there's corroboration, even if not every single thing in here is true, there is still some corroboration.
Got fucking reality against the fucking ropes.
All right. Ropey-dopey.
Well, in those childhood abductions, Terry said he was taken into a sort of flying city 100 times larger than the building-sized craft. It was so large, he said, that he couldn't see the end of it. It was so big that he had to be shuttled through the thing in golf cart-like conveyances.
Whoa, like when we saw Ozzy at Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah.
When they put him in that humiliating little cart.
He got put in a wagon. Yeah. To go talk about his new pinball machine.
He's 80 years old.
No, he just needs a wheelchair. He just needs a metal-ass wheelchair.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they put him in a cart instead.
The cart's fine. It's great.
He's kind of emasculating. He looked like he was a bunch of watermelons.
He is.
When Terry was a kid, he said that he was actually taken somewhere nice with other children who all played together. And there was a lady there the entire time taking care of them. And Terry remembered the lady fondly. But that doesn't mean that Terry enjoyed it.
Yes.
He began to realize that they'd taken him multiple times during his childhood, but made him forget. But they still left an inkling of memory so he would recognize him when he grew up and learn to see them as his quote-unquote space brothers.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
But in this, Terry came to think of it as a grooming process with unknown alien goals.
Absolutely, because they're not telling you what their goals are.
Mm-mm.
Like, if this hybrid program is real, we don't know why. They have insinuated many things, and various entities have talked about this hybrid program is used to either allow their offspring to be more stable in our reality. There's like that one thing, or just seed us with alien DNA that will allow us to evolutionarily grow up, grow past the need for things like nuclear weapons and oil and fake butter.
But when Terry was asked what the monkey men looked like, Terry got a little angry, saying, "Don't be asinine. They look like monkeys, you fucking moron.
You fucking moron."
All right, Terry, let's calm down, please.
I know what I saw.
Oh, my.
And then he said that the monkey faces were actually masks.
Yep.
And when they took the masks off, they were, in fact, little gray people with large eyes.
Yes, it is me. It's always been me, your neighborhood gray.
But they, he said the eyes, he said it's not as cartoonishly as they've seen. That you see, like, normally the way Whitley Strieber described them. They actually look more like wraparound sunglasses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Very Guy Fieri.
Live from your grave.
A roast as dark as the night. Perfect for fueling the cryptid research and mad ravings required for your podcasting. Don't mind the red eyes. He's just trying to warn you of the bridge.
The bridge.
Finally, from the caffeine-addled brains of Springheel Jack Coffee and Last Podcast on the Left, we bring you Mothman's Red Eye Blend. Yes, delicious Panama beans. Go to lastpodcastmerch.com to order yours today.
Now, once Terry and Toby were on the ship, they realized that they were inside the building-sized craft that had appeared above their campsite. Apparently, this craft held not only smaller craft like the Black Diamond they'd seen on the job, but an actual support staff made up of 50 or 60 humans, all wearing tan-colored flight suits with orange insignia of rank. And interestingly, to this, Terry CO said, quote,
"Son of a bitch, Terry, you'll forget about the men in tan flight suits."
And that, to me, if this is all true, points towards the possibility that the CO might have knowledge of a joint alien government project, and considering how he said son of a bitch,
son
he might
bitch.
Be on one side of a cold war between a branch of the government that works with aliens and another branch that believes that working with the aliens is a bad idea.
What do we get from it? I don't know. Who benefits? Don't know.
Queen
Bono.
Don't know.
Sounds like he was just tripping balls at Target.
I don't know.
We don't know.
But after walking past the support crew, Terry said that he and Toby saw a long well of aquariums filled with what he thought at first were swimming puppies.
It's puppies!
Oh, no. Puppies can't swim like that, though.
No. Yeah, when he looked closer, they were twitching reptilian creatures with big eyes floating in pink water.
And they're cute to somebody.
Yeah.
As he walked by more aquariums, he saw that some of them housed human-like creatures. And one of them turned towards Terry and blinked.
Yes!
Whoa!
Wink!
Wow!
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Hey.
Is it lunchtime yet?
Sweet.
But after that haul of horrors, Terry and Toby were ushered into a steel sort of waiting room. It seemed like steel, but it's aliens. Who the fuck knows? It was filled with other people. Some of these people were nude, holding their own clothes.
Maybe they were going through security at the airport.
Could be. Hello. You're going to want to do pre-check, I guess. Oh, man.
There were, however, windows, and Terry said that they were definitely in space by this point, flying near the moon.
You can see the goddamn moon. It's right there. It's outside the goddamn window.
Yeah, he looked down at the moon, and he saw a city on the surface of the dark side of the moon.
Fucking dude. Pink Floyd was right.
Yeah. And the moon city was populated not only by aliens, but also humans who were living and working side by side.
See, we can get along. All we gotta do is learn to fuck. We gotta find out what holes go to what parts.
Yeah, bro.
Absolutely. I bet you it's quite similar, to be honest.
I always wondered that on Star Trek, because every alien species seems to be fucking every other alien species.
It's fun. It's part of what the universe propagating its own life.
I do actually find myself, we watch a lot of Star Trek in my home, and I do find myself more often than not just staring at an alien and wondering what the genitals look like.
You see? Because that's usually real American. Mm-hmm. That's what Americans
This is why if you're a wife out there, never say, honey, what you think about? Like, what you thinking about?
No,
because
that's it. Oh, of course. No, it's
Where's the butthole?
Thinking how much I love you. It's like, no. It's been like, where's the pussy on that?
Yeah, that thing got two buttholes or two. Or three? Maybe one. Yeah.
I don't know.
This was told to Terry, all this shit about the moon city and all that, by a tour guide who was there to help Terry through the experience. But Terry's
concierge experience.
Uh-huh.
Not bad.
But Terry soon realized that his tour guide was the same nice lady who had watched over him during his childhood abductions.
Yep.
Oh, very sweet.
Yeah. She was a half alien, half human, a hybrid. This actually tracks with other abductions we've heard about, because hybrids are often used by Greys to take care of abducted children or to be a sort of less freaky liaison for abductees.
Well, also, a lot of times, pure humans are used to nurse some of these hybrid babies, because according to people that have experienced these types of abduction scenarios, what they have learned conversely through whatever they could figure out is that they are watching, humans are there to sort of like give compassion to these aliens that don't particularly know how to emote.
Yeah.
And that they also give milk. And so they go in and a lot of times they're forced to nurse some form of alien hybrid baby that's always gnawing and they always take.
Yes, indeed. And I'm sure they have the ability to suckle.
Is that a slight against me?
Yeah, I think that was a dig against you. Yeah.
It's because I'm too human to suck tit. Not for milk. I only do it for pleasure.
Pleasure.
Well, concerning this hybrid, Terry said he felt a maternal attraction to her. A maternal attraction, meaning she...
Mommy!
Mommy! Yeah, not a maternal attraction.
Yeah, yeah, not like, oh, mom's stuck in the washing machine.
Again, and again, and again.
And while he did like her, she was still an unsettling creature.
Oh, yeah.
She eventually gave him a hug. But he said when he looked down into her gown to peek at her breasts, which he said was natural. It was a natural thing. You just naturally do that,
apparently.
Yeah, I
used to always do that with my mother.
I always go, cleave check.
Cleave check. Let's see. Cleave check.
Well, he was not specific about what he saw, but he said what was down that shirt was non-human and repulsive.
The titties were upside down.
Whoa, it's Guado.
But this hug did calm him down a bit.
Yeah, it is nice.
Well, after the hug, though, Terry was somehow back in the tent, trying to scream, but making no sounds. Seems like it was a bit of, you're doing an act out of him screaming, but not being
making
able to
no sound. Again, 11 years. It's a podcast. Really good. Really good act out.
Everything, Terry said, was silent except for the hum of the spaceship. And Toby was nowhere to be found. Presumably, he was still on the ship. Uh-oh. Another bright light came, and Terry was back in the ship, in that room with all the other humans, being undressed by the Greys.
Do you remember the Coronado group abduction?
Yeah.
Where it was like the one guy, it was the poor dude that was just the mark of the aliens, and that one guy, he was abducted with that other guy, and he just sat there watching as they were shoving stuff up his penis and like, and him going, screaming. Meanwhile, they're all like, the other aliens are like, you guys are really struggling over there. You seem to not really be enjoying this. Meanwhile, like, he wasn't probed?
No, not at all. Now, after Terry was undressed, he was taken to a white room where he was laid down on the telltale alien experimentation table alongside Toby. I think he was next to Toby. It's hard to follow.
Yeah, there's some dream logic here. We'll see what's here. But yeah, I could definitely, if I saw the table, I'd be like, no fucking way. Is that? Wait a second. Is that? The alien abduction probe table?
That's the milking table.
Okay, I've been gaping all day.
Well, his body went limp as multiple aliens did the bidding of the boss alien, the one, as you said, that was a little more official, who was insect-like.
Yes.
Oh.
Terry also said that the smaller aliens were almost robots, worker bees, and that tracks with what we've heard about Greys in other abduction scenarios, you know, the different classifications. The small Greys, some theorize, might be robots.
We do learn here.
Oh, sure.
The examination then came, where the aliens drew blood from Terry and Toby's body and, of course, used a machine that was put over their genitals to suck the sperm from their bodies painfully and humiliatingly as both Terry and Toby scream.
Because they do. It makes you so hard that it hurts. And then you're coming and you're against your will. They're just, it's not good.
Yeah, because you're coming through a flaccid penis, which can't be fun.
I mean, sometimes, but it's only just because you've been spitting all day.
How did it even work?
Sitting thinking about it.
Wait a second, what?
Yeah, you can come through a flaccid penis.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you can, absolutely.
I guess you can't. I mean, if you're one of those guys that comes when they're just touched, but
it goes
you
back
mean?
And forth. Depends on how long you've been going at it.
All right.
I guess so.
Hey, am I an alien? Is this what you're saying? I'm some kind of alien?
Well, the guy that comes 100 times a day, his name is Dale Decker. Why don't they just abduct Dale Decker? He'll give them all the cum they need.
I have extra cum already.
From what Terry said, the demeanor of the tallest alien, the insect-like alien, the one who was directing the semen-sucking and the blood-sucking, his demeanor was, hey, nothing personal, guys. Just doing my job.
Just my fucking job.
Just doing my job.
Just doing your job. Absolutely. Also, just a quick quote here from Dale Decker, another man that needs to be abducted. Imagine being on your knees at your father's funeral beside his casket, saying goodbye to him, and then you have 9 orgasms right there. Yeah. Well, your whole family is standing behind you.
That's what Chris Harry's gonna do.
No, they gotta get Dale Decker.
Well, basically, this is the old trope of experimentation reverse. These are aliens dispassionately trying to learn about our anatomy through experimentation, just as we do with lower life forms here on planet Earth.
Sure.
And like humans who don't enjoy the sound of monkeys screaming.
We hate it.
The aliens got annoyed when Terry screamed. And he told Terry, come on, you know us. You know you're not going to remember this.
Wow. Relax.
Yeah, he said, if you're not going to remember, why should you scream?
Why are you going to scream all the time? Like, screaming like you haven't, like we haven't done this countless times to you.
They should have a little statue of human beings then thanking us for all of the scientific research they do on us, like they have with the little mouse.
No, there's definitely a statue somewhere in Alpha Centauri to all the humans we've drained.
Yes.
Then the alien touched Terry's temple and all went black.
Wow.
Next thing Terry knew, he and Toby were back at the campsite. But because the beaming crew screwed up, they were about 20 feet away from their tent.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, come on.
We got to get back. Ship's over.
They were laying on the ground next to their cars. So the aliens had to come in and manually carry them back to the tent.
Yep. That's got to be difficult for them.
They're just like us, aren't they?
Yeah. And that's where we rejoin the story, with Terry aching and Toby on his knees, crying over what had just been done to both of them. The ship rose up in the air like a hot air balloon, and that was that. Back at the hypnosis session, though, the CO, after Terry spilled the beans, he was trying to make Terry forget that anything had ever happened. He said, quote,
okay, listen. Hey, you and Toby, you went on a camping trip to Devil's Den, and it was a horrible trip. You hated it. You both were bug-bitten, you were sick.
That's all over now, right? All you will remember is our pleasant chat about camping. There's nothing on the moon but rocks. There is nothing on the moon but rocks. You forget about the tiny woman who was kind to you. Everything you saw or heard of Devil's Den, you will forget. That's it.
Wow. Talk about middle manager Brad. All right, fine.
After that, Terry did indeed try to forget. He told nobody about his experience, save for his wife, for many years. But even then, things came back in flashes.
Ugh.
In 1987, Terry and his wife were out Christmas shopping when Terry had a panic attack after seeing the cover of a book that showed an illustration of an alien gray.
Whitley Strieber's Communion. This set off thousands of people.
Yeah, it was the first time that he'd ever seen the representation of the alien gray. And of course, his specific so-called monkey men. Terry also had missing time incidents, like when he went out for a ride on his hog when he suddenly found himself on a gravel road, which he never rode on because it damaged the paint on his bike.
Hmm.
When he arrived home, he found that he was 2 hours late. Missing time.
His wife was freaking out and called the cops and shit. It's like 2 hours late. That's not that long. Not 1989.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, when someone's out on a motorcycle, you worry.
You too.
You worry a lot. Sheila, however, was all in when it came to the encounters.
Yeah.
Whenever Terry talked...
That's a good wife.
That's a great wife. Whenever Terry talked with her about it, he had nightmares in which he'd wake up screaming. But one night, Sheila said she woke up and saw a 3-foot-tall woman standing at the edge of their bed.
Zelda Rubinstein.
Whoa! Yeah.
The 3-footer told Sheila,
go back to sleep.
Go back to sleep.
And she
did. No problem. Okay. Yeah.
But after the alien implant we discussed at the beginning of this episode was discovered, high strangeness slowly began to seep back into Terry Lovelace's life, starting in 2016. That year, Terry mysteriously started losing weight, dropping from 240 pounds to 150, baffling doctors.
Was it cancer?
It does sound like cancer, yes.
No, baffled doctors, because they thought...
Oh, baffled doctors.
They thought, oh, this dude's definitely got cancer.
Cancer, he's got cancer. Yeah.
But they were baffled.
But he didn't. And this prompted Terry to tell everything he knew. And he even tried reaching out to Toby to corroborate his story.
I wonder what Toby's up to.
Toby's dead.
Toby died. Now, what happened with Toby?
alcoholism.
Ooh.
Died of alcoholism.
Was it suicide then? Or
well,
was
alcoholism
it,
is, no, belongs... Like
yeah,
suicide.
But sometimes you get drunk, you pop yourself in the head, something like that, or was
no,
it just
he,
the...
he just drank enough to kill himself.
Yeah, cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, something like that. You can kill yourself with drinking in all manner of ways. It doesn't have to just be cirrhosis.
Both my father's father and his grandfather died of alcoholism.
Wow.
That's why your dad thought he was going to be dead, but he's never going to die.
No, he's crushing it.
Yeah.
Now, by 2017, Terry had decided to take his show on the road.
Oh!
Telling his tale at various UFO conferences around America. He did the circuit before he wrote the book, which I give him credit for.
I say it. True.
But about a month after a talk at a conference in Houston, Terry woke up in the middle of the night sweating.
Oh, God.
Sitting directly across from him was what appeared to be a 4-foot-tall Asiatic woman wearing oversized sunglasses that obscured her large almond-shaped eyes and part of her face. Around her throat was a red scarf that hid her pencil-thin neck, but otherwise, she was a woman in black.
Hear that, girls?
Whoa.
You can torment ufologists as well.
Very cool.
Isn't that cool? There's a whole book. One day we'll cover all of women in black is actually a massive. There's many of them.
Absolutely. Remember Freddie Classy Blassie? He would call people he didn't like pencil necks.
Oh, I love pencil neck.
Yeah, I like pencil neck. I like four eyes.
Yeah, four eyes. Oh, that's good.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Now, like many people in black, she wore a wig, an outdated jet black number sitting slightly askew on the top of her head.
Is this right? Did I put it on right? Hey, Harriet. Harriet. Is it on right? Yes. Okay.
From what Terry said, the wig was reminiscent of Betty Rubble from the Flintstones.
Oh.
And so he called her Betty. But his immediate thought upon seeing the PIB was, quote,
that wig looks ridiculous.
That's what's so crazy.
Yeah. That wig. I can't believe it. No netting.
Bah.
However, Betty, as she will henceforth be called, Betty. She responded telepathically by asking,
Sal. You don't like my hair? It's the same.
And when Terry asked, the same as what? She responded,
the same as the last time we met.
Whoa, that's scary.
She told him that, yes, she was the hybrid he'd been seeing his entire life. Mm-hmm. The one who took care of him as a child. Yep. And the one who gave him the tour of the ship before they sucked out all of his blood and cum.
Do you remember when we sucked out your blood and all of your cum?
I do, yes. It's kind of why I'm traumatized.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
She then said that he would not be taken that night, nor would there be any more examinations ever. Then she removed her sunglasses to reveal large... but not alien gray, large black eyes.
Yes. But still, she's like, freaky?
Yeah.
Is this freaking you out?
Yeah.
Well, once she looked appropriately scary, Betty told Terry that his public discourses that he'd been giving UFO conferences about his experiences, these were worrisome to both Terry's government and her, quote unquote, hosts.
Interesting.
Oh.
Adding that the things he saw were crucial to their shared shadowy agenda.
What are we getting out of the government alien fucking combination? What are we getting, huh?
What are
Let
we
me
getting?
Know.
Yeah. What are they getting?
What are they
More
getting?
Importantly, that's what I want to know.
More streaming services.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. God.
Are you ready for Disney, Discovery, Netflix, Amazon Plus?
Yes. Yay.
Can't wait.
Terry asked about the implant next, asking how many people had been tagged in the same way Terry had been tagged with the metal object in his knee. She said, thousands over 3 generations.
Ooh.
Oh.
She said that the implants do indeed serve a purpose, but cause no harm.
Could be a locator tag.
Could be. Or just could be some sort of, what do they call them, like a Fitbit.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, it's just sending back information.
They scoop you up once they read your cum levels that are a certain like mark, and then they were like, that's how they know to come squeeze you.
That's how they know to come back.
Interesting. Like an oil check almost.
Yep.
Yeah. But since the aliens nor Terry's government would allow Terry to remove it by himself,
yes,
lest scientists discover its purpose.
Because he did get use of his leg back, mm-hmm. but he left the implant in. Because now there's a lot of kind of criticism of like, why didn't you take the implant out? And he was like, because the aliens said no.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Okay.
The aliens said, we'll do it.
Yep.
I hope he has alien insurance.
No, that's actually the scariest thing of all is the bill afterwards. And then you have to go fight. You always have to fight.
Ugh. Them too?
It's not Good necessary Lord. To remove it.
Please. Oh, it's an optional surgery.
It's an optional surgery.
Yeah, it's cosmetic.
Well, Terry then asked why the government would try to stop him from removing the implant. But while she did not reply verbally, she nodded. And a graphic replay of not two, but four alien encounters played out in Terry's brain. While two of these encounters were shared in Terry's book, The Devil's Den, the third, Betty said, was just for him and his wife.
Ooh,
that's nice. Oh, that's nice.
The fourth, though, was beyond Terry's understanding.
Hmm.
And apparently, there will be a full discourse on accounts 3 and 4 after Terry's death.
Yeah! Oh, that's look at him. All Show right. me the corpse!
Sweet.
Soon after, Terry woke up with pain in both of his knees and dark bruises showed on his legs. He soon got another x-ray, but found that the metal implants were gone and all that was left were two small wires serving an unknown purpose.
Absolutely incredible. Very fascinating. I love this story. Please, if you've ever experienced getting an implant.
Yeah.
Email sidestories, lpotl@gmail.com. Because I'd love to know if you went through the process of getting it removed, if you went through it, because it is really interesting. It comes up quite a bit in these stories. And people have found chunks of weird garbage in people, and we don't know where it comes from.
Yeah,
and
yes, so indeed.
That's why I find this story, you know, it's very interesting. And again, from a reputable source that waited until he was no longer a high-powered lawyer to tell it.
Yeah, unless Absolutely. This is like his retirement present to himself.
It was.
Been fooling a bunch of fucking dumpy UFO people.
Incredible. Well, I can't wait to do it myself.
Have fun with it. Also, on a side note, the D character here, again, Dale Decker. So what happened is he suffers from persistent genital arousal syndrome. After a disc slipped in his back, he just started coming.
Yeah, man, you gotta be careful, since. Dude. Wear a back brace.
So,
you gotta stretch.
Yeah, barely had something to do with a disc slip.
Oh,
and
God.
Then he was on the way to the hospital. And then he just started coming a whole bunch.
God.
And then they say that, here he's been pretty much.
These are the real horrors. These are the real true story that we should be covering.
He and his wife have to sleep in separate beds. He comes so much.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
My God. So
I'm going to tell Natalie she's got it easy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. I'm going to tell my wife the same thing.
Yeah.
But at least I'm not coming constantly.
All the time.
And screaming about it.
Oh, well, we are currently in Amsterdam, Lord. Aren't we?
Currently, I believe so. I mean, technically, me and you are in New York City and Ben's in Los Angeles, but we're also currently in Amsterdam.
We are currently in Amsterdam, and I just want to say Guten Tag and Danke, right?
Both of those are German words.
Mm.
Those are German greetings.
Things are going to be fine.
You just said good day and thank you.
Things have already been fine since we've been in Europe.
Yeah.
In Amsterdam, 600,000 people, they speak Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the amount of people that speak Dutch is 600,000.
Wow. What? That's it?
I think so. Anyway, I heard that one time.
Now we're just making. Now with the.
No, I think
fucked.
That is true. I do all think right. it's true. But again, don't worry, everyone. You're doing better than Terry. You're doing better than Toby, and you're doing better than Dale Decker.
Yes, you
so
are.
So that's all
we
that
really
matters.
Are.
And yes, it's been fantastic here in Amsterdam. Henry did something really funny where he drank so much he fell in a moat.
Oh,
which was
yes.
pretty great.
I'm still getting out of the muck off me.
Yep.
Yep. And then Marcus was kicked out of the Heineken factory for just really falling in love there.
Yeah,
he loves Heineken.
I love I love green bottles.
Yeah, everybody said that about Marcus. He's famous for loving Heineken.
And as the new leader of Amsterdam, I promise to spread the wealth around.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
So thank you guys. We'll see you soon. Can't wait.
All right.
Next week, we're getting creepy.
Oh, this was kind of creepy.
We're getting even more creepy.
Oh, even more creepy.
Because we're covering phantom coming syndrome. We just did, technically.
I know. That was interesting. All right, everyone. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Magustalations.
Hail me.
Mm-hmm.
And dog, which is good. That's goodbye in Dutch.
Yeah, dog.
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 Dog. Well, that's nice.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.